welcome to a SearchITChannel.com podcast series on understanding, selling, and troubleshooting IT service management. The third and final part of our series will provide our discussion on ITSM challenges. My name is Robin LaRusso, and I'll be your podcast moderator. Before we begin, I'd like to give you a bit about our speaker. George Spalding is an IT service management and support specialist who's made a decade-long commitment to improving the industry. George spent several years as a consultant to the White House on technical presentations and White House conferences. He also coordinated technical presentations for members of the President's Cabinet, the Smithsonian Institution, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. George has also achieved the CISSP, CISA, and CISM certifications, as well as EIDL's IT Service Manager certification, and he was recently selected by the UK's Office of Government Commerce as an author for the next version of EIDL. There are many acronyms being tossed around in the ITSM space: EIDL, ISO, COBIT, SOX, CMM. How should a channel professional decide what is important and what isn't?
Okay, let's do some quick context. EIDL's been around since actually the late 80s. The first books actually started coming out around 1989. It was the beginning of trying to introduce processes into the world of IT and became what we now know as IT service management. CMM has been around as a way to measure process maturity, starting with the software development side and moving now into basically the way to measure any process maturity or the maturity of any process. Recently, EITL has been codified more universally in an ISO standard called ISO 20000. And it's basically ISO 20000 incorporates everything that's already in EITL, adds a couple of things on top. Back in 1995, an organization called ISACA started forming to help IT auditors have some sort of a baseline that they could compare things to. So they came out with what we now call COBIT. COBIT has been modified over the years, and now COBIT is more of an audit and management standard for IT. Is there a pecking order? Or the question that we always get, which is, I see there are many things, which one should I pick? I can only do one. Which one should I pick? Don't pick any. Decide where your pain points are in the operation and see if we can go fix those. And what the conversation usually gets to is, let's fix change management. Let's fix configuration management. And let's fix the help desk. Well, if I fix change management, that's going to be EITL that I'm working on, and that's also going to kick into ISO 20000, and it turns out that there's a change management portion to COBIT. So by, in essence, doing one thing, fixing change management, I've actually I've raised my bar on three different frameworks or standards. So I think that if people can stop trying to worry about which one of these to pick, and flip the question around and say, what do I really need to do to make my operation better? Usually they say, well, let me go with EITL first. And the reason is because EITL feeds directly into ISO 20000 without going through an audit. And EITL basically feeds into COBIT. In fact, if you do EITL to its full extent, you've pretty much taken care of about 50% of COBIT. If you do EITL's first few processes that make sense, you've probably taken care of, I would say, six of the key elements out of 12 that a SOX auditor is looking at. So which one do I do first? Our recommendation usually ends up being EITL, but we like to get to that by saying, what's really wrong with the organization and which one do you need to do? Is there a pecking order? I believe COBIT is the umbrella framework of the entire ITSM world, that there are probably zero IT organizations that would match up to a full-fledged COBIT audit. So because there are 34 processes and a gazillion specific objectives that one needs to achieve. So COBIT is almost a goal. It's where I really want my IT shop to point, or a direction, a vision, if you will, of where IT could be whereas I think that ITIL is a little more hands-on and specific and day-to-day.
Could you also discuss why organizations are finding it so important now?
It started getting important in the U.S. at least, and North America in general, right around the turn of the century. And that happened to meet up with a few other events. The Y2K was finished. That was very distracting to people. They couldn't possibly look at anything else while Y2K was going on. So that took 2 or 3 years out of most corporate IT's life. At the same time, the internet bubble burst and the dot-com bubble burst. The economy tanked. And rather than being IT departments being flush with money and being able to hire, quite frankly, as many people as they wanted to and do as many projects that didn't seem to make sense, but they did them anyway, all through the late 90s when things were booming, that all changed in about 2000, 2001, and suddenly the IT industry underwent a real dose of reality, cold water in the face, and people from above IT were saying, why don't you get your house in order? There was a whole lot of IT directors and CIOs going, well, we need to basically fix IT. Or in the end, what they looked around and they said, wow, they discovered by Googling it that, wow, it turns out that there's actually kind of a framework that's already out there. I never heard of it. It's called ITIL, the IT Infrastructure Library. As they looked into it, they realized that it made sense. They really shouldn't have three different change management processes. They really should have a database of their entire configuration. Even though those things seemed difficult to achieve, they made a lot of sense. And then they started to make sense from the point of saying, wow, if we had but one change management process, we would have fewer outages. We'd have higher availability. With higher availability and fewer outages, we'd have fewer incidents. We'd be able to guarantee higher levels of uptime. Right about the time they were thinking this, Congress passes the Sarbanes-Oxley Act in 2002. And suddenly, IT has a whole other thing on their plate that they never had before. IT, for the first time, has to comply. Comply with something. Quite frankly, up until that time, IT was definitely a cowboy outfit. If anyone out there has ever built a house or added on to their house, they had to go to a legitimate authority, the county or city government, and get some plans approved. And then they had to do some work, and they had to get an electrical permit, and then they had to get a plumbing permit, and then they had to get authorized contractors to do the work, and they didn't even finish the work, and they had to have someone come in and inspect the work, inspect the building, inspect the electrical, inspect the plumbing, and then they could finish, say, adding on a three-season porch or adding a room to their house. Yet the qualification to build an IT infrastructure for a major financial institution is the ability to fog a mirror. I don't have to get a permit. I don't have anyone inspecting it. I may have had to get a Microsoft certification or a Cisco certification in order for someone to hire me. But in terms of the impact of an outage or a security breach on a network for a major financial organization, being widespread, millions of people lose their credit cards or have potential for identity theft, and then where are we? We still don't have any real rules or codes on how to build things. So I think that ITIL is the beginning of getting IT to run really like a business, which means we completely focus on services and we stop focusing on technology. We stop focusing on technology domains and technology silos, and we focus on service to the business.
I'm hearing a lot about the many things that ITIL can help you do. What about things it might not be best for? Can you talk a little bit about some of the reasonable expectations for what ITSM and ITIL can address and what it can't?
First of all, ITIL does not replace management. We still need to manage IT. ITIL doesn't really tell you how to manage IT. ITIL's a process framework for operations. It really doesn't talk about software development. It doesn't really have anything in it concerning project management. ITIL itself The ITIL framework as it now stands is fairly weak on security. In ITIL, security management is built around the concept of building a process in a secure way. In terms of the whole concept of IT security management, ITIL's pretty weak. Reasonable expectations are that if one embraces ITIL, then things should be, then IT operations should be smoother, meaning that we start with, say, the service desk, and we treat that as a reactionary element. So right now, we've got basically people answering the phone because something's going wrong. So we try and fix the band-aiding, which is really what the service desk is, so that we can do that more efficiently and we can do it as a process. And then we move quickly to addressing the causes of all those phone calls, which are incidents that where something has happened. And in almost every case, the cause of an incident is a change. Mm-hmm. So we end up looking at change management. And as everyone in the world can tell you, most changes go in over the weekend, and the worst day to be on the help desk is Monday. The first thing that ITIL does when it goes in an organization is it takes the day-to-day operations and actually smooths them out. It makes it run better. The second is it says, well, if we're going to start talking services to the business, we need some expectations, and we need to look at more planning-oriented things, like we need some better capacity management, and tell me about availability and what you're really trying to achieve with availability. And so part of the issue in ITIL is to say, let's really look at business continuity and the continuity plan, and let's try and make sense out of what we're really trying to achieve. Let's even establish some priorities and do a BIA, a business impact assessment. So there's two pieces to the ITIL world. One is an operational kind of day-to-day, let's clean this up and make it run better. And then the other side of it is, okay, now that we've done that, that's nice that we've kind of put out some fires and put some Band-Aids on and tried to fix a few things. Now let's try and plan better so that a lot of the things that we had to do to clean things up operationally really don't occur in the future because we've done better planning.
I'm curious to know, what is a typical benchmark used to justify ITSM projects?
It's a very difficult question. You have to spend the money in order to realize the ROI. Well, let's put it this way. When I go in and say and have this question thrown at me, then I say, well, there's no question that we will be able to improve outages. So just by fixing a few incident and problem management issues and some change management issues, we'll be able to reduce outages by probably half. What's the cost of an outage or an hour's downtime in this system? And many people can't answer that question. So they don't have any idea really what the cost is to the business. And it's really the business cost, because that's really where the ROI comes in. It's the cost to the business of not having this service available. So because I can't do invoicing with the system, I am experiencing this cost or this negative impact to the business. Those are the kind of numbers we need to establish. Then we can get the technical people to say, well, we can fix this, this, and this, so that will increase your availability by this. And there suddenly, there's actual ROI. But we don't look at, right now, the cost to the business of not having a service. And that's the first step on establishing the ROI. There have been a number of studies of existing clients who have gone with ITIL and have started to, after 1 to 2 years, have a 20% decrease in IT spending. Procter & Gamble went with ITIL for 4 years and went public in an article and said that they had saved 15% of their IT budget, which in Procter & Gamble represented some $500 billion or so. No, what was it? It was $500 million, $500 million over 4 years. So there's been some very high-profile examples of people saving 15, 20, 25%. We try not to preach that those kind of numbers. If people achieve them, that's fabulous. But we don't have too much trouble saying that if you embrace ITIL, a 10% reduction in IT costs is quite achievable in about 2 years.
So how is the business engaged in these projects, and what is the impact of implementing ITSM processes on the business?
It's huge, of course. We call it IT service management, not IT systems management. So the largest impact right away is the fact that the IT organization begins to interact with the business as a supplier. It becomes the way that we run IT as different from the way we're running it today. When we start to reframe, if you will, everything that IT does around the concept of services to the business, where we start at the very top level, where we look at the business process, and then we recognize that that business process is going to be supported by one or more IT services, and that each of those IT services is going to be supported by a number of IT systems, and that each of those systems are going to have within them a number of IT components. Really, that's all IT stuff, and that IT cares a lot about that. But from the business perspective, all they really want is they want their process to run smoothly. They have no idea what web server technology we're using for the website. They just want the website to be up, and they want it to be fast. Therefore, the real impact on the business is the fact that IT completely changes the conversation from a bunch of acronyms and a bunch of technology-based conversations into a conversation about what can I do for you? What services do you need from us? And the conversation is a two-way, and it's really a negotiation. We begin to talk about service management, and right after that conversation, the business says, how much? How much is this going to cost? And of course, the correct IT answer is, well, that all depends on how good you'd like it to be. And that's where we get into a discussion of service level management. Now we're saying, we can provide you any level of service you desire. You just have to pay for it. The way I phrase it is that the business should have the highest level of service from IT that they can afford, because it really ends up being about the money. All of this stuff that IT does for the business costs money. And the business often complains that IT is too expensive. And in some ways, they're right, because what they're really saying is they're too expensive for what I'm getting. We now get into this negotiation. And the negotiation is, how good do you want it, Mr. Business? And they say, I want it to be perfect. I want 100% availability. And when we actually price that out and tell them how much that's going to cost, then they say, well, I guess I don't really want that, or I can't afford that. What can you give me for this much money? Or how much does it cost if I had 99% availability, et cetera? So it becomes a realistic negotiation. And once you get into service levels and service level management and IT service management as a whole, now we're redefining the definition of success in IT. When you embrace service level management, you're saying, we have mutually agreed on the definition of success. The definition of success is to have the service at the following level. That's the definition of success. That becomes what you manage IT to. You manage IT to that service level. The business expects that level of service. The costs and pricing are all geared around that level of service. So the business begins dealing with IT as a supplier of service, not as a technical impediment to what I'm trying to envision.
For people who are ready to start working with IDLE, what do you think about automating?
Well, IDLE basically embraces automation, and the reason is because we believe that you should be able to automate everything you possibly can in the IDLE framework, because there'll be plenty of work left over to do manually. The good news is that in 2007, the tool sets are remarkably impressive. When we started this game back around the turn of the century, some of the major tool vendors really hadn't heard of ITIL and didn't care about it, didn't believe that it had any sort of future. Now, there is not a major tool vendor that isn't writing their suite to ITIL, their tool suite. And it really is more than a single purpose or one-off solution. It really is an integrated suite the big vendors have. It's very impressive. We used to say at Pink Elephant that we wanted you to go and design all the processes before you ever went and shopped for a tool. Now, we believe the tools have reached such a level of maturity that we recommend that you do process definition and process design pretty much at the same time that you're shopping for a tool and that you're actually committing to purchase a tool, because the tool vendors have gone so far towards aligning themselves with the ITIL framework, that really there isn't a lot of work to do for a practitioner that buys a tool set in today's market.
Just to kind of wrap things up, I might to touch on how long these projects actually take.
We're in the consulting world, so we like to answer every question with "it all depends," and we'll be happy to fly out there and talk to you. But the truth is that we get asked that question so much that we need to come up with an answer that we believe is true. Basically, when someone asks that question, not knowing anything about anyone's organization and not having any idea of how far along they are and not having any idea where their tool is and all that, the answer that we give is around 3 years. We believe that there is a right order to do things, and an order that makes sense, and that is tends to be starting at the service desk and incident management level, and then moving into change management, problem management, then over to configuration management, then bringing in release management. And what I just described is going to be 1.5 to 2 years. And then all during that same early first 2 years, you're working on and planning behind the scenes for service level management. And then you bring that into play somewhere in 2. And then the whole project ends up being done and implemented with great results usually by the end of 3.
Thank you very much. If you do have any questions for our speaker, you may email editor@searchitchannel.com. A final thank you to our guest speaker, and thank you all so much for joining us today.